The following is an original production of AZPM News.
I'm James Reel, and today I'm speaking with opera singer and composer Will Liverman. In partnership with the Tucson Desert Song Festival, you're featured during True Concord Voices and Orchestra's Music of the Pioneers program on January 16th, 17th, and 18th. And separately, there is a recital at the UA School of Music's Holsklaw Hall on January 20th at 7 p.m. Can you tell us a bit about what audiences can expect from those two different programs?
I mean, first of all, I'm thrilled to be here. This is my first time in Tucson and in Arizona, period. So it's nice to make a splash with these pairs of concerts. I gotta say, I was at the rehearsal last night for True Concord, and they sound absolutely amazing. If you love choral music and you love choral work, I mean, you don't want to miss them. I'm honored to join them for the Copland portion of songs that they're going to do, and doing some of the American songs for that concert. And we have three concerts. And then for the recital, I will be featuring songs from my album, Dreams of a New Day, featuring songs by Black composers. And so we'll kind of do some select songs and a piece by Robert Orne's Mortal Storm, Margaret Bond's Three Dream Portraits. I'm going to do an original work that I had written. And it's just pieces that I've sung for years that are near and dear to my heart. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to making my debut here in Arizona.
A lot of people are looking forward to it, too. What are the differences vocally and psychologically between singing solo in a 600-seat hall and singing in front of a chorus in a space twice that large?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think when you have a smaller space, there is, I don't know, more of an intimacy, an immediacy, when you can actually, you know, feel the audience be a little bit closer and their energy. Now, what you do with that, you know, it's different for every performer. But yeah, I think psychologically when I sing, I don't think much changes other than, you know, trying to be honest and truthful to what I'm, you know, trying to convey. I'll say vocally, though, you know, in smaller spaces, sometimes I'm able to tap into different colors and, you know, be a little bit more quiet on phrases that are a bit softer and access different parts of my voice that I wouldn't be able to do if we're talking, you know, a space that's like twice that, where the sound may not travel as far. So, yeah, you know, it's just maybe a few different colors and things that I tap into when I'm doing recitals in like smaller venues.
Do you feel you have a natural advantage as an American singing American material in English, or perhaps a disadvantage as an American when you sing opera and art song in foreign languages?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, you know, there's a natural advantage to singing in a language that you grew up speaking. I think a natural way of phrasing things that just, you know, kind of comes without even thinking in languages, you know, in English, you know, we speak it every day. Yeah. And I think with foreign languages, there are extra steps to get there. You know, wrapping your mouth around the dialect is one thing, and then understanding the words, and then trying to figure out, you know, how to phrase the piece accordingly. Whereas if it was a, you know, a French speaker singing a French song, you know, they may, of course, will have like a natural sense of how to phrase and shape something because they really understand the language at that level. And not to say that it can't be achieved, but it just takes, for my case, you know, it takes extra work. I think there are singers out there that have really good ears that may not be native speakers, but their French sounds, you know, flawless, and they can, you know, really pick up on it fast. But for me, you know, it's just extra steps and a lot of practice when I switch gears into doing something in a foreign language, I would say.
Let's talk about your dual career, singer and composer. You've written at least one opera, Factotum, right? The takeoff on Barber of Seville. When you're composing music, does being a singer give you a practical advantage? Or on the downside, are you stuck hearing your own voice in your head as you write for other singers and characters?
I am stuck hearing my voice a lot. And there is pluses and minuses, I think, to both. You know, being a singer, I think, especially for a low voice, for my own voice type, I know, you know, the range in which things need to sit. Every guy's voice has a slightly different break the higher you go, but where things sit, you know, the majority of where you want the singer to be for the storytelling and to be able to shape things and do things with their voice, it's advantageous to be able to be a singer and, you know, be in tune with that. Now, that's not to say that, you know, when I sing right for higher voices, it's still a learning curve. And that's where the kind of the disadvantage of also singing and hearing myself a lot is that because I'm a baritone and when I hum melodies, I'm thinking of it in a certain key that's comfortable for me. But if I try to take that and then put it in a soprano voice, then it might be too low. So then I have to like either change keys or, you know, play around with the range so that it sits well. That's kind of fascinating, honestly, the human voice, and every color is so different and so unique. And so that's why I love to collaborate with a lot of people. That's how I can learn the best in working with other singers and understanding tone and range and where things should be placed. And so, yeah, it's all quite fascinating.
Let me follow up on that a little bit. It used to be very common for singers of older repertory to transpose an aria up or down to suit their individual voices. You have performed not only a lot of standard rep, but also a lot of brand new music. And is that sort of thing forbidden anymore? Is the text sacred these days?
Oh, you mean like, yeah, transposing
right.
things? Yeah, that's a really great question. You know, to be honest, I actually don't see it as much in newer things, you know. When I think about, you know, how we take old pieces and transpose them to our, you know, a key that's suitable. Yeah, I don't know why, you know, I feel like things are these days are, you know, they're written all the way through and there's like a certain pathway that the composer may have in mind that doesn't want that, you know, can't be altered. And if a key change, you know, might throw off, you know, whatever, but I don't see it as much. I'm not going to say that there aren't pieces that are written today where people have transposed them. But I haven't seen it as much. You know, I don't know when or how we kind of got away from that.
When you're working on a premiere and presumably working with the composer in the final phases of preparing the performance, is there still a lot of adjustment to be done? Do you have any input at that late phase?
Yeah, that's a great question. It all depends on the creatives and, you know, how much collaboration can there be between the composer, librettist, and the performers actually carrying out the work. I find, you know, in some cases, people are pretty set on what they want from the workshop, and it can be difficult to even get like three notes changed, you know, like there, you know, it depends on a lot of things. But at least in my experience with doing Factotum and working on pieces where the composer is more of a collaborative mind and being open to change, I think it just benefits everyone. You know, you want the performer to feel comfortable with the work to a point where they can get past the music and tell the story and not have to worry about, oh God, this is sitting too high. I have to focus on just the technique and I can't, you know, really find that balance to deliver what needs to be delivered in a meaningful way when your brain is focused on other things. So yeah, it depends on who's in the room and like how flexible people may be to change. You know, on Broadway, they change things all the time. You know, they have the luxury of doing reviews and have a whole phase where they have audience, you know, come in and check out the show. And then they'll huddle up afterwards and be like, okay, this didn't work. That didn't work. Let's change this key. You know, they're building it on the spot. Whereas, you know, in opera, we don't have that luxury of having like a review phase. It's just like, you maybe get one, two workshops and then the world premiere and then that's it, you know? So it's, yeah, it's an interesting kind of process.
People have been predicting the demise of opera for a long time now. It's expensive for one thing and money is tight, but there are also changes in the audience and all sorts of other things happening. Yet here you are singing not only, say, Mozart, but you're involved in brand new operas fresh off the page. What's your feeling about the state of opera here in the early 21st century?
Yeah, I choose to be hopeful because the state of creatives that we have, you know, we are just so brilliant. We have so many wonderful composers and writers that are walking the earth today. I think opera in general, we need a better PR team, perhaps. You know, I can't tell you the number of times I'll go to a rehearsal, I'll take a lift somewhere if I'm not driving, and the Uber driver will drop me off and then look at the venue and it'll say like, whatever opera company. I was like, oh, we have an opera company here? I had no idea. I've lived here for 20 years. You know, like, I think there's, you know, maybe a part of it is the just the increase of visibility somehow, because, you know, we have the brains and the minds to make great art. For me, this is one of the things I've been thinking about when we talk about like the evolution of opera. I would like to see more operas that maybe include more dialogue, because there's often so much plot we have to get to. I find that we're singing so many words on stage. And not to say that there's a lot of 21st, you know, a lot of contemporary operas that are sung all the way through that aren't brilliant. There's plenty of works that I've seen that are sung all the way through and work super well. But I'd be curious, you know, as we talk about like things to tap into and what to consider, you know, you look at a piece like Magic Flute that has a lot of dialogue. And then when they get to a moment that they want to live in, which makes operas, you know, so great and grand, to like live in a moment and focus on that. And, you know, kind of using the dialogue as a vehicle to get there. I'd be curious to see like what more, you know, how we can continue to experiment with different ideas and ways of storytelling. Because then to the listener, to be able to switch between a dialogue and then someone singing opera, you know, it unlocks a different way of storytelling and a different way they have to listen, and maybe even an appreciation of the operatic voice when they hear someone going from speaking into an operatic song, you know. And someone might say, well, that's more or less what Broadway does. But if it's operatically sung, you know, like, we always blur the lines anyway. That's just, you know, one small thing I've been thinking about as I've been working on Factotum and how we can continue to bring in new audiences, you know. So,
do you feel a personal responsibility to decline performances at controversial locales, whether they be politicized art centers or problematic nations? Or do you think your work as an artist should transcend those considerations?
Yeah, I think that's a very sensitive thing. That means that could be a lot of different things for a lot of different people, depending on what country they live in and, you know, the political climate situation. I think it all is a case by case basis. Now, if I take a step back and say, you know, generally speaking, I'm more in the camp of, you know, art has the power to transcend, even if the landscape and climate might be, you know, something that, you know, folks are against, and, oh, you shouldn't perform here or there, like, you know, let's protest this and that. My thinking is, well, what if there's, you know, one or two audience members that still may need something from that performance, whether it's a piece on climate change or, you know, Three Dream Portraits by Margaret Bonds. You never know how music can affect someone more than words can, because, you know, music is energy and we're drawn to that energy. Or even someone who may, you know, be going through a tough time and they, you know, come to the concert and they're moved by it. You know, is it worth it for those few people, you know, to go through with a concert, even if you're in disagreement with the political climate? But I think, you know, it all is case by case, because it's just a very sort of tightrope to walk, and you just have to kind of lay your cards out, looking at what's being presented and, you know, what you're going to be singing, the venue, there's just a lot at play. But, you know, I'm inclined to think that, you know, art is, you know, bigger than any political thing. It's just something that's mysterious and powerful, that has the power to create an impact that we, you know, we can't put into words.
So there's something deeper you're trying to convey to the audience than just the words. What are some examples of that?
Maybe it's some, I think, you know, because the words are the vehicle, you know. I think it's just my job to get out of the way. You know, don't BS the audience. I think it's important to always be as authentic as you can whenever you're on stage. And it's not to say that we don't get into like show mode of like, okay, it's performance day. I got to hydrate, got to do this and that, you know, like there's that. But then like when you're up on the stage, I think it's just delivering something from the heart. And that's kind of what I try to lead with, be it, you know, a recital or if I'm with the choir, you know, just being honest and vulnerable on stage and, you know, leaving things as an offering to the audience and letting that be enough.
Will, thanks for joining us. Been a great pleasure.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
I've been speaking with Will Liverman. I'm James Reel for AZPM.
This has been an original production of AZPM News.